morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, the program that is devoted to those of you who have come to realize, or at least who are interested in knowing, that all of the world's religious, political, economic, military, and media institutions are corrupt, even counterproductive. I'm Yana. Our number, if you'd like to join us, is 877-300-7645. In Greece today, we're getting a fair amount of hypocrisy. You've got Tsipras, the prime minister of Greece, the communist, tongue-lashing his creditors, telling those who have loaned him money that they're evil, that they're vicious, that they're blackmailers, that they're cruel. That's kind of odd if your hand is out begging for more money and you're demeaning those from whom you are begging money. And he said that the Greek people would never be blackmailed into submission by these tyrants. And then today, he is out telling the European bankers that, and the International Monetary Fund, you know, I'll sign, we'll accept the deal that you're offering. Now, at the same time, he is telling the Greek population that is in near riot mode that they need to reject the bailout. And his head of finance, his finance minister, has publicly said that if the Greeks do not disavow, vote overwhelmingly to reject the bailout, that he'll resign. And yet, the prime minister says, I'll sign a deal. And yet, he's urging on every possible television commercial they can buy, every news channel, he is urging, Tsipras, the communist, is urging the Greeks to reject the proposal, and yet he is telling the bankers that he'll accept the proposal. I mean, talk about schizophrenic. Would you knowingly loan billions of dollars to a schizophrenic? Yesterday, there was this huge banner that was hung on the finance minister building. So in the capital of Athens, at the finance ministry, hung a huge banner. It said, no to blackmail, no to austerity. Now, we talked yesterday about the stupidity of blackmail. Now, you're not being blackmailed when you're begging for money. You're asking for something, and you're not being blackmailed if somebody refuses to give you what you're asking for. Ever. That's not how blackmail works. Blackmail is, you either give me the money or I will shoot you. Blackmail is, if you don't give me more money, I won't pay you back any of the money that we owe you. The Greeks are trying to blackmail the European Union and the International Monetary Fund. The International Monetary Fund and the European Union is not in the position to blackmail the Greeks. The Greeks owe them money. The Greeks want more money from them. There is no way that that can be described as blackmail. And yet, I told you that the Greeks have been dumbed down to the point and are so covetous, so desirous of having entitlements that they have not earned and can't pay for, that they're willing to reverse the role. Rather than positioning themselves correctly as the blackmailers, they want to position those who have been bailing them out and helping them as the blackmailers. But now think about austerity. The Greeks are in this position because they overindulged themselves. They paid themselves pensions and health benefits and all manner of social network kinds of programs that transferred money that the government did not have to the citizens to make the citizens, A, more dependent, and B, more willing to vote for the politicians who were offering them from empty coffers. If you are spending more than you have, more than you earn, more than you have available. Are you being austere or are you being indulgent? Isn't that tough stuff? I mean, if you make $50,000 a year and you spend $5,000 a year, you could call your spending and your lifestyle austere. You would be a proud practitioner of austerity if you made $50,000 a year and you lived off of $5,000 a year. But if you make $50,000 a year and you spend $100,000 a year, your spending would be ostentatious, would be indulgent. You would be doing the opposite of being austere. So, with the Greeks being in debt to the degree they are, with them spending more money than they take in by a considerable margin, they're the opposite of austere. So why are they saying no to austerity? They haven't been austere in so long no one could remember. Now, no one is asking them to be austere. All people are asking is them to be rational, to be prudent, to spend less money on pensions and government salaries and government employees and all manner of social giveaways than they take in. They have to spend less than they take in as a government in all manner of taxes because they have the debt to service. They have to spend less than their revenues because of the debt service, and yet they're spending more than their revenues. This is not really difficult to understand. So here's this story out of Athens. It says, Finance Minister Yannis, long Greek name, Varoufakis, said on Thursday that he would resign immediately if Greeks voting in a referendum on Sunday endorse efforts to secure an international bailout deal for the country. His comment is the starkest sign yet that the government of Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras is likely to be rebuffed or could even fall if a yes vote prevails. Now, he said yes to the lenders, and yet he himself is urging a no vote on the referendum. Mr. Tsipras' government has been exhorting Greeks this week to vote no on the referendum, which, while couched in confusing language, effectively asks whether or not the nation is willing to accept more austerity in exchange for billions of euros that the country needs to return to solvency. By the way, the country does not become solvent if it receives billions more in euros. You're insolvent when your income is less than your expenditures. Unless you have savings, which the Greeks do not have. So you can go a number of years where your income is less than your expenditures so long as you have savings. But since the Greek savings is a negative number, a negative 316 billion, every year that they spend more than they take in, they become more and more insolvent. They are insolvent. Loaning them the money will not make them solvent. It makes them more insolvent. I'm sure the journalist didn't know that, but there's a little insight. After a remarkable series of twists and turns and negotiations with creditors this week, the proposal on which the Greeks will be voting is no longer even on the table. As the bailout package has expired, it expired on Tuesday night. Nonetheless, in televised remarks and interviews played repetitively on every Greek television station, Mr. Tsipras and the finance minister have urged Greeks to vote against the package. They say that a no vote would give the government a stronger hand in negotiations with Greek creditors as Athens seeks to repudiate austerity and reduce its mountainous debt load, one of the world's largest. How in the world can you repudiate what they call is austerity. So you're going to repudiate the entitlement, dependence, mentality of socialism, of communism. You want to repudiate that while reducing your debt. Can't be done. It is that mentality of redistribution of wealth, of entitlements. In America, we have Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, welfare, reverse income tax credits, housing allowances, food stamps. Those are our entitlements. And those entitlements, those indulgences that cause people to be dependent, is what bankrupts countries. It's what builds debt. That's why America is so extravagantly in debt. These things work against each other. They do not work in harmony with each other. So that you know, I did look up this morning, because we talked about it yesterday, the actual percentage of debt to GDP that Greece is drowning under is 177%. So Greeks' debt to GDP is a total of 177%. Their budget is 60% of their total economic output. It's a socialist country. I mean, it's like America. Way too many people employed in public jobs, the public jobs with public unions, and politicians enacting all manner of extravagant pensions and for life health care systems. It's just completely out of whack. It's like it is in America. Their total debt for Greece is $316 billion. I mean, it's not even a rounding error compared to the $17 to $18 trillion that the United States is in debt. I mean, $316 billion versus $17 to $18 trillion in debt. So that you also know, while the 177% debt to GDP is a huge number, it's not the largest number in the industrialized world. The largest number is actually Japan. Japan has gone bonkers in overstimulating its economy and adding fictitious fiat money, and they're 230% debt to GDP. The United States, 102%. Here is just to give you a little insight as to where the world stands. There are countries like Australia that are very prudent economically, at least prudent by comparison to the indulgence of the rest of the world. Australia, for example, has debt to GDP of 28%. Brazil's not so good. Brazil is a more of a socialist country. Debt to GDP is almost 60%. Canada, unfortunately, has gone the way of the United States. They're in serious, serious shape. Canadians are drowning under debt that is nearly 90% of GDP. The Chinese, having transferred to a capitalist, totally free enterprise economy. They are no longer communist as it relates to their economics, but instead have fully embraced free enterprise. Debt in China. Now, this is a country that was considered very poor, hugely impoverished, totally underdeveloped. This is a country before they enacted free enterprise institutions, had way too many people and not near enough productivity to care for them. So if you expected any country to be in debt, you know, if you thought that, you know, economic growth, for example, was a result, as the Fed would tell you, of stimulating the economy and increasing the money supply, well, the Chinese have not been increasing their money supply like the United States has. The Chinese have not been going into debt to stimulate the economy like the United States has done. They instead have taken regulations off of business, doing the opposite of what the United States has done. So taking the exact opposite approach to the United States, the Chinese have gone from being the 10th largest economy in the world to the 2nd largest economy in the world, and have gone from being the world's 10th largest manufacturer to the world's largest manufacturing nation, all in a very short period of time, and with a strategy that is the antithesis of what is being used by bankers and politicians and the Federal Reserve in the United States. The Chinese debt to GDP is 20%. The European area as a whole, the euro area, if you would to describe it that way, the countries that use the euro, 92% debt to GDP. France is among the worst, although it's only third worst in the list. But France, which is essentially a socialist country, 95% debt to GDP. Germany, which has a lot of socialism mixed into its economy, very high now corporate taxes in Germany, 75% debt to GDP. India, which is a free enterprise country, 67%. Italy, which is the country I shared with our with all of you, would be the next country to fall in Europe. Debt to GDP in Italy, an astounding 132%. Now, I've shared, Japan is in the worst condition. Japan has got so many huge problems, part of which is its xenophobia and the fact that they don't accept non-Japanese into their culture and into their businesses. And the Japanese have become so self-absorbed, they don't want to share life with their children. They think that somehow not having children is going to keep them with more money to spend and more time to spend it, and therefore that there's this notion in Japan that the Japanese man or woman is going to be happier and more fulfilled if they don't have kids. And so the birth rate in Japan is hugely below the mortality rate in Japan, so that Japan is withering away as a country. And so to create the illusion of still being vibrant, they have added more funny money to their economy than any other nation on earth. 230% debt to GDP. Mexico, 31% debt to GDP. Poor country, yet 31% debt to GDP. The Netherlands, where you have socialism red and claw and tooth, 70%. You know, we have been trouncing the Russians and talking about how these economic sanctions that the West has imposed on the Russians have been so crippling. Well, Russia's debt to GDP is the lowest of any country in the industrialized world, 17%. Spain is going to be one of the next dominoes to fall, nearly 100%. And, of course, the United Kingdom at 89%, and the United States at 101%. Those are the numbers. Read them and weep, as they say. We'll be back in a moment. About a week ago, the Islamic State spokesperson Abu Muhammad al-Adani urged jihadists to turn the holy month of Ramadan into a time of, quote, calamity for the infidels, for Shiites, and for apostate Muslims. Now, if you were to include from his view the people that he, as a religious leader, urged jihadists to celebrate the holy month of Ramadan by killing, by inflicting great calamity, and you were to include infidels would be any non-Muslim. That would be a atheist, an agnostic, a socialist, humanist, Christian, Jew, Buddhist, Hindu. And then you were to add to that list apostate Muslims, which would be, the Quran defines apostate Muslims, so let's use the Quran's definition. Moderate Muslim, non-jihadist Muslim. And then you were to add Shiite Muslims to that list. What percentage of the world population did he just declare is the target of Islamic Jihad? Would it not be 100% of the world minus jihadist Muslims? All non-jihadist Muslims, all Shiite Muslims, even if they are jihadists, all non-Muslims. Wouldn't that be, I'm just trying to do the math here. Wouldn't that include all the world's population minus the perpetrators of the terrorist acts, which would be the Sunni jihadist Muslims? So on that basis, you're either a terrorist or you're the target of the terrorists. That would be 100% of the world. So all your coexisters out there, understand that the jihadist Muslims have declared war on not only you, but on every symbol across your bumper sticker. How does that feel? Do you think that's compassionate? Is that loving? Is that enlightened? For you to endorse and to choose to coexist with those who have declared war on you, who wish to inflict terror on you, who wish to kill you, and will kill you given the opportunity to do so. And their targets are everyone except themselves. And themselves are defined as Sunni jihadists, fundamentalist Sunni Muslims, at war with the entire rest of the world. The Pentagon spokesman, Colonel Steve Warren, noted it that, and it's, it just says, it's never used, they don't use the definite article in this, and I don't understand why. You know, if we were to speak of the United States. Now, you could, you know, so this is the Islamic State, but it's just written here, noted Islamic State. So, you know, I don't know why it's not there. I mean, I guess if you were speaking of Australia, for example, which we mentioned a moment ago, you'd say noted Australia had claimed, but, you know, so maybe it's being used in that manner. But you wouldn't say noted United States had, or you even noted United States had. But anyway, the Islamic State had claimed responsibility for one attack and said that the Pentagon was looking into, quote, whether or not these various and far-flung attacks were coordinated centrally or whether or not they were just coincidental. These are the attacks that took place in Tunisia, the hotel attack there, the mosque attack in Kuwait that killed so many there, beheading that took place in France, and the beheading of women in Syria. I think there's one more that I have omitted. And he wants to know whether they were coordinated centrally or whether they were coincidental. And this colonel is being paid a large salary, probably in the range of $100,000, maybe more, by the U.S. government to make that statement, to find that out. So let me help. There is a 0% chance that they were coordinated centrally. 0%. The U.S. government don't need to waste the time to figure that out. The reason I know that is because the Islamic State in its instructions has expressly told Sunni Muslims not to consult with them. To use their words, they have a ongoing authorization to attack any non-jihadist Muslim under any circumstances anywhere. That would be everyone except the terrorists. So they are authorized to kill anyone, including if you're an American Muslims. Because there's no, the American Muslims, they can bomb their American Muslim mosque because they aren't out committing jihad. I guess the suicide bomber can't blow up another suicide bomber, but other than that, the entire world is authorized, and they said specifically, do it, don't wait, don't ask for permission. You've been granted permission. So there is no zero coordinated authority. They have specifically avoided communicating back and forth and have asked that their jihadists don't communicate back and forth because the jihadists, the Islamic jihadists, are one of the few people who never come up on the NSA surveillance. This idea that we have all of this CIA and NSA surveillance to keep Americans safe, bull. They're never using it. There are no coordinated attacks. None. Because they know that if they attempt to coordinate an attack and they communicate with one another, the NSA will pick up on that communication. So they're the ones not using it, which means that we're wasting our money with the NSA and the CIA, completely squandering it, making it such that all they're investigating is ourselves. Matter of fact, I saw a program this morning on the Today Show where the little girl that works with Matt Lauer was out just being so wowed and impressed by the New York Police Department. And they showed the cameras that they have on all of their aircraft that monitor everybody and everything that people are doing. And then they showed this room with hundreds and hundreds of monitors, all of everybody in the city, and showed these people, hundreds of them, monitoring these monitors and looking for facial recognition software, keeping track of where everyone was going. You have no privacy. None. Not from the drones, not from the domestic spying Air Force, not from the cameras, which are ubiquitous. They're everywhere. And we're just talking about how wonderful a job they're doing and never bothered to say, boy, isn't this a tremendous invasion of our privacy? We've given up our freedom in hopes of security, recognizing that there is nothing that can be done in these cases. And the Islamic State knows it, so they're not playing the way we play. Now, the second part is whether they were coincidental. Well, let me save the U.S. government some money there, too. They were not coincidental. There is a common denominator. The big common denominator, of course, is they're Muslim jihadists. They're fundamentalist Muslims doing what fundamentalist Muslims do, following Muhammad's example. And particularly in this case, they're Sunnis following the Sunnah. The Sunnah is the example of Muhammad. It's the basis of Sharia law. It is the totality of Islam. Islam is nothing more, nothing less than the words and deeds of Muhammad. Period. I mean, the Quran is Muhammad's words. The Hadith is Muhammad's words. And the Quran and Hadith contain Muhammad's example. It's nothing more. Islam is nothing more than Muhammad. Doesn't go any further than that. Now, Muhammad certainly blended pagan Arab traditions into his religion. He didn't add anything new to it. His God's not new. His shrine is not new. His prostration prayer is not new. His Hajj is not new. His celebration of Ramadan is not new. He didn't add anything to it. I mean, you talk about a dunderhead. I mean, a guy without any creativity, without any insights, without anything to add to anybody. He just took Islam and based it entirely on pagan traditions of the Arabs. And then he blended that with a criminal manifesto, which was no different, really, than the crime syndicates that had gone before and that have come after, along with a declaration of war on all humankind. And nothing new in any of that. So was it coincidental? No. It's the common denominator, universal common denominator, is Muslims being Muslims. And the unique common denominator of these attacks is that they were perpetrated in the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, which we discussed at great length yesterday as how stupid Ramadan really is. And if you were a thinking Muslim, you would cease to be a Muslim if you just considered Ramadan. But here's the U.S. government squandering our money. This says, even if they were not coordinated, two sources familiar with the thinking of U.S. intelligence agencies. Now, really going way beyond what I think is appropriate. We don't have any intelligence agencies. We have a lack of intelligence agencies, and they don't think. Said that they were likely to have been inspired by the Islamic State's call to jihad. Well, let me make this really clear. Islam has a call to jihad. The Quran has a call to jihad. The Hadith has a call to jihad. Sharia has a call to jihad. Allah has a call to jihad. The Hadith, Muhammad, Allah, the Quran, Sharia, all of it has a call to jihad. The Quran is extraordinarily explicit to say that all Muslims are mandated, obligated to engage in jihad, which is only described as killing non-Muslims and peaceful Muslims, moderate Muslims, using all manner of weapons and lying in wait for them, ambushing them, surprising them, terrorizing them. As we continue to cover this story, this particular individual, his name is Adam Schiff, the top Democrat on the U.S. House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. Boy, there you go. An intelligence committee of the United States. Said the attacks made clear that, now that means that he's lying, that the Islamic State's, quote, ability to inspire and radicalize followers is a global threat and no nation is beyond its insidious reach. The problem is not that the Islamic State is inspiring people. The problem isn't that the Islamic State is reaching out. The problem is Islam. And the terrorists are the best Muslims. They are not radicalized. And it isn't the Islamic State that is inspiring them. It is Muhammad, his Quran, his Hadith, his Sunnah, his Sharia, his Quran, his God. It is they're being inspired by all of the myths which underpin all of the stupidity, all of the ignorance, all of the revolting verbiage that underpins Islam. That is what's inspiring. And no one is being radicalized. So, once again, when a politician uses clear, they're lying. Peter Newman, director of the International Center for the Study of Radicalization, based in London, said it was unlikely that the attacks were directly coordinated. Well, thank you, Peter. But, Peter, you work for a center whose name is ridiculous. There is no radicalization. 100% of the Islamic terrorists are fundamentalists. They're the opposite of radicals. He said, I don't think that they talked to each other, knew each other, or that there was a central command that told them to do that, he said. There is zero evidence that they were coordinated. That is correct. But you didn't have to get that from a spokesperson. All you had to do is read what this man said. All you had to do is read it. He said, do not wait for permission. Do not seek permission. Do not even communicate with us. You have permission. The Quran is what gives you permission to kill at will. At the same time, the French attack, which Newman likened to other lone wolf attacks, this lone wolf situation. How can you be a lone wolf when you're part of a doctrine, a human institution that comprises 1.5 billion people? I mean, lone wolf is Scott going out as golfers against gophers. And Scott establishing his organization as Golfers Against Gophers, of which he is the lone member, and that he writes a charter of Golfers Against Gophers, and he attacks gophers willy-nilly as a result of his gopher anti-gopher manifesto. That would make you a lone wolf. But if Scott chooses to attack gophers as part of the Boy Scouts, that would not make him a lone wolf if the Boy Scouts had a doctrine that said gophers are evil. Kill all gophers. Well, since all Muslims who are engaged in jihad are part of the institution, the human institution of Islam, and they're reading from their constitution, which is the Quran, which orders them to kill all non-Muslims and all peaceful Muslims, all moderate Muslims, all non-jihadist Muslims. They cannot, by definition, be a lone wolf. All this is done is just to try to make people discount the connection between Islam and terror. They said that this Newman was continuing to speak, said, in the past year, these lone wolves included Sydney, Ottawa, and Copenhagen, and that they could have been inspired by the Islamic State. No, they were inspired by Islam. In the case of the French attack, it's exactly the kind of attack the Islamic State wants people to do on their own without prior consultation, without coordination, or whatever. Yeah, and that's because they're devoted to the Quran. Dumbest book ever written. Most vicious, most immoral book ever written. Most counterproductive book ever written. But they're committed to this stupidity. And the stupidity doesn't say, you know, if you want to, it tells you to do it. It doesn't tell you that you have to restrain the time. It says all the time. It doesn't tell you to restrain the place. It says in every place for all time, without end, without question, Muslims are ordered to commit jihad. So why would they need authorization or coordination by the Islamic State?